Elizabeth Elliot studied Greek in college with the goal of working as a Bible translator. Shortly after arriving in Ecuador, she married fellow missionary Jim Elliot, who was later killed while trying to reach out to the fierce Alca Indians, also known as the Wadani. Soon after the tragic incident, Elizabeth took her 3-year-old daughter Valerie, and they lived among the same Indian tribe that had killed her husband. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, reading today a little bit more from my jungle diaries. Today, I have the story of perhaps the most rigorous of jungle journeys that I made. I'm thankful for my father's teaching us to enjoy long walks and sometimes some pretty rigorous hikes and mountain climbs. This entry was written September 10th, 1959, somewhere on the Curaray. The Curaray is one of the headwaters of the Amazon. We left Tiwano this morning around 6:30. Val walked the whole way out to Punzunu with no difficulties at all. I should say that Valerie was 4 years old at this time. I managed to pick up 3 thorns in my feet, but otherwise the trip was a snap. The Indians had left a papaya in the canoe, which tasted exceedingly delightful after so many weeks with no fresh fruit, and after the heat of the trip. On the way down the Anyango River, the men saw a boa as big as a tree. But of course I caught nary a glimpse of it, as usual. We saw lots of tapir and wild pig tracks and puma tracks in one spot, but no game, birds, or fish. It seems incredible that I am actually on the first lap of a journey to the United States. Maybe I'm not going to get there. Val is slow on the trail, not mainly because of pace. She does as well as the average gringo adult, at least. But because she wants to know whose feet those are when she sees tracks. She wants to pick flowers and red toadstools. She points out to me clay for molding pots. She stops to watch fish in the streams. She even looks under the logs for a certain kind I never heard of, which she says the Alcas say live under logs. She wants to know where the lovely flower fragrance is coming from. Coming upriver in the canoe, she slept under a tent of lisang leaves, most effective protection from a fierce sun. Right now she has finished a large bowl of chicha, that was a drink made out of manioc, and is chewing on a piece of wild bird and manioc given her by the men. I am seated in my hammock, slung between 2 trees near the river beach. The BBC is coming through very clearly on my Zenith transistor radio. It gives a very unusual atmosphere here, 1,000 miles, seemingly, from nowhere. I don't plan to bring it back with me. Too little is worth listening to. Too much time can be wasted with it. An Indian just brought me a banana leaf, bearing a piece of manioc and 2 small pieces of bird, shot on their way down yesterday, smoked last night, cooked just now. Delicious. September 13th. Arahuno. This was the nearest mission station outside of Alca territory. Very thankfully back here in my little house after the most memorable, to say the least, canoe trip out. On Friday morning, September 11th, we left our leaf huts on the beach under a very glowering sky. It was 6:30 a.m. or so, but seemed to be getting darker every minute. In half an hour, the rain was upon us, coming lightly at first, and very quickly turning to the chilling, pelting kind of storm we had on our way up the Anyango with Marge and Mardell. The river began to rise perceptibly, and of course, poling became more and more laborious. As protection from the rain, the men cut me some lisang leaves again, which had been such a help against the heat of the day before. These are huge leaves that cover a person from head to toe. One leaf will cover you. Makes a great raincoat. I made a tent over Val, who was sitting between my knees, and put another leaf on my head. It made a very effective insulation, which provided a surprising degree of heat for the two of us, despite the fact that it leaked considerably. When we reached the deeper section of the river, where it narrows between overhanging cliffs, the water was rushing furiously against us. The men had had the foresight to stop at the last pinduk stand. Pinduk is a kind of river reed, and cut heavier poles for the strain against the rising current. They slid the canoe cautiously along the very edge of the river, under the tree boughs, keeping out of the main current, which would have carried us away like an eggshell. They had no paddle, only the poles, which would not have reached bottom. The river kept rising until the men were forced to hack through the brush, which hangs low on the water, in order to haul the canoe through. By this time, Val and I were both very cold, and the roar of the river, plus the stinging, relentless hammer of the rain on our legs, arms, and on the leaf hats, that's in quotation marks, was extremely wearying. I could not sit up straight because of the low branches under which we were passing, and the position, with mine and Val's weight concentrated on my spine, was not a comfortable one. Then my hat, quote-unquote, kept catching on branches and getting swiped off, drenching both of us and causing a frenzy to try to retrieve it while watching the next bough on which I might hook my chin. The men kept leaping in and out of the canoe, now hauling it by means of brute arm strength, now poling, now clawing at the vines which hung from the trees, and thus pulling us forward, now pushing from the stern, always taking great care that the bow did not inch outwards and catch in the raging torrent, thus swinging us all into it. Their leaping in and out rocked the canoe more than usual, and to keep one's balance was something of a trick. It's easy to rub knees and elbows raw in this effort, I learned in my early canoe experiences. Once we had to cross a tributary which shot out from a canyon with terrific force. Gabriel, one of the men that was poling, first edged his way into it, hanging on to vines, and when the vines would no longer reach, threw himself with all his strength across the rest of the distance and just managed to clutch a vine on that side. Hanging on to this, he was able to grasp the bow of the canoe as the other men pushed it forward. Then, at another point, a cataract hurled itself down the rock face of the cliff, threatening to swamp us. We could not go behind it. We dared not get into the current. Somewhat the same tactic was used to solve this one. It was all rather spine-tingling. Finally, the river rose to the level of the tree branches, making it impossible to pass under them. The men dared not attempt another crossing at this point, though we had made a number of exciting ones. The river was rolling and boiling by now. There was no choice but to tie up the canoe and strike out on foot through trailless jungle. Gabriel led the way, since he had the lightest cargo, and hacked a trail for us. The rain showed no signs of lessening. The forest was very dark. I was grateful for the change of position and found that carrying Val piggyback soon heated me up. She can walk perfectly well on a trail, but is too slow when she has to climb over logs and under branches, etc. So since our progress was discouragingly slow anyhow, I carried her at intervals. None of the men was familiar with the territory, so we made some needless curves, following the general pattern of the river. Every so often we came upon a ravine with a swift stream to be crossed. Val crossed up to her neck several times. Or a swamp, or a dense tangle of vines and low branches to be hacked through. But fortunately, it was virgin jungle, which in this rainforest means that it is more open than second growth. I prayed several times for protection from snakes. We came at length to a piata, or overgrown plantation, which was solid brush with plenty of thorns. We were all, of course, barefoot. Osvaldo was doing the cutting now, and suddenly he stopped, seeming as if all the spirit had gone out of him. A huge, deadly fer-de-lance snake was coiled a few feet from his bare feet. In this region, this snake is usually only 3 feet long or so. This one was at least 6, and fat as a rattlesnake. No one wanted to attempt to kill it. Finally, Osvaldo and used my Alca spear to pin it to the ground, and then beat it with a stick. We examined the fangs, about 3/4 of an inch long. "The Lord showed it to me," Osvaldo said. I fervently agreed and thanked the Lord. At last we could see the Quechua houses across the river, and the sun broke through the clouds. It had been 3 or 4 hours since we left the canoe, a welcome sight. We shouted, and eventually Dario poled across and took us to his house. What blessings are these? Fire, roofs, hammocks. Billy, Dario's wife, fed us all a good supper of fish, wild boar, plantains, and manioc. We ate ravenously, our first meal of the day, as we had had nothing to eat for breakfast, the Indians' night lines having caught nothing. Val tore around outside with all the energy of a 4-year-old, as if she'd been through nothing at all that day. I was bone-weary and still very cold, so gratefully sank into my hammock by the fire. Val finally came in and crawled into her blanket, spread on 2 banana leaves beside me. She slept the night through. I was awake a good part of the time, scratching the bites of the night before, sand flies which penetrate even a blanket, and trying to keep warm by a very small fire. The Indians were sleeping on a platform above, so I did not want to make too much smoke. But how often and how sincerely I thank the Lord for the comforts of that Indian house during the night, only He remembers. We left at 6:30 the next morning after a breakfast of chicha and bananas. This was Val's first time on a really long trail, and she did famously, now whistling as she skipped along, now imitating the birds, now pretending she's an alka with a blowgun, using a hollow leaf stem about 2 feet long. Crossing the logs, which serve as bridges, she stopped right in the middle, forcing me to stand trembling and terrified behind her. "Look, Mama. Yaya." That's an alka word for a particular fish. Or, "Nyiwimumai, nyiwimuingero," which meant, "That looks like a nyiwimo," a particular species of fish. Those slippery logs are nothing to her bare, light-stepping feet. She wanted me to hold her hand some of the time, but this is difficult when walking single file. I held a stick. She held the other end. "I'm your little wagon, Mama," she said. There were few complaints for the whole 8 hours and 45 minutes. Twice she said, "I would like to sit down," which we did, and once I discovered that her legs were being chafed by the elastic in her sunsuit. Considering how many times she stopped to pick flowers, spot a bird, examine a snail shell, or get herself a new blowgun, I don't think her time was too bad. 15 miles, less than 9 hours, through pretty rugged terrain, at the age of 4. Thanks be to God for all His protections of us in those long forgotten years.
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliot has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliot. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.